The content here is for informational purposes only, should not be taken as legal, business, tax, or investment advice, or be used to evaluate any investment or security, and is not directed at any investors or potential investors in any A16Z fund. For more details, please see a16z.com/disclosures.
Hi, and welcome to the A16Z podcast. Last year, The Economist declared data to be the world's most valuable resource today. Big corporations certainly have more data now at their fingertips than ever before. So how do you actually create actionable insights and experience from your data for your customers without getting too close for comfort? This conversation includes CEO and co-founder of Mixpanel, Suhail Doshi, Gil Elbaz, the founder and CEO of Factual, CEO of Foursquare, Jeff Gluck, and is moderated by A16Z partner Lauren Burson. It took place at our summit event in November 2017.
So traditionally, IT invested in tools to store and measure and house data, but held the keys to the castle, making it difficult for marketers and business people to actually make sense of data and information about their customers. I think the quote I often hear is, if it takes 6 months to answer a question, you probably stop asking questions. There is a key evolution here towards IT tools, like some of the ones that you have, democratizing data and bringing access to both IT individuals as well as marketers and business folks. Can you talk a little bit about the shifting roles and responsibilities and how this is playing out and affecting you?
So on the accessibility side, what we find traditionally is that pretty much everybody has a very large data pipeline that usually consists of ingesting the information and then transforming that information, storing it somewhere, graphing it or querying it, and then for an executive finally being able to like get a dashboard where they can finally get that number. You know, we don't all want to be SQL experts. And so it's really important to find ways to give them the power to be able to do that. However, there is a privacy component that we all do have to tackle in a company because, you know, for example, Mixpanel works with a few banks. And one problem with, of course, the banking industry, the financial services industry, is that there's just a level of information that they cannot divulge to us. And they have to keep even housed away from their own employees. And so therein lies this big problem with how do you make the data accessible while still empowering the rest of the company, even though they can't have access to that. And reporting is one way, but it's really about using the best product to solve the most important problem that you have with the data. Large companies today try to find a one-size-fits-all tool, and that just doesn't work anymore. What works is finding one tool that serves a major part of your organization so that it will really empower them.
The lens that I look at it from is you have a cohort of extremely powerful data-first companies. These are software companies that don't sell software, the Googles and Facebooks, who have this incredible DNA around collecting information, knowing how to make it actionable, and then building an incredible array of products that delight users, and they're also monetizing users. And it's quite a threat to the broader industry. We're seeing new verticals where they're pursuing market share. And I think with this changing landscape, what it means is that all other companies have to figure out how are we going to orient our strategies around getting access to more data. First-party data, build one-to-one relationships with users so that we have it. And then we have to ask the big questions. What data are we great at? What data do we absolutely need to be competitive but aren't great at? And what are the strategies going to be in order to have something that's equivalent?
So I think about all the data that people are drowning in the digital world companies and how little they understand the real world. For Foursquare, we have 125,000 companies using our platform to build better mobile experiences. We're very much an enterprise company. And 92% of the economy happens in the real world. And so when I was CMO and I spent $1 billion at Travelocity, I had the cookie. And I knew what advertising worked. I knew a lot about my users. And if you're a retailer, you have CRM, you have email, you have your website, you have all this data, but you know nothing about what your users are doing in the real world until they come in and use your cash register. And, you know, 92% of the economy is in the real world. So I think, you know, for those of us in the location intelligence business, we are organizing all of that movement data in a mobile-first world and making it actionable. So you don't need to train everyone in SQL. We will enable you to build contextual experiences.
Let's talk a little bit more about how you really use digital data to transform a physical interaction.
A lot of what we think of as great customer experience in the real world is contextual. And we talk about context. It's all right, I mean, are you arriving at your desk for the 10,000th time, or are you turning the corner in Barcelona and you're near this incredible tapas place that you've never been to? You know, are you at home? Are you in a new restaurant or one that you've been to tons of times before? And is there content for you? We sat down with this company called TouchTunes. It's a $500 million music business in 65,000 locations. And their problem was they have jukeboxes, right? Remember the dollar in the jukebox? This is a $500 million business, but increasingly it's on an app. But they have these 65,000 jukeboxes, and people, their users, who spend like $15 a month on average, didn't know when they could control the music in the bar or the restaurant. So we enabled them through our SDK to say, hey, are you at the perfect pint? Jay-Z's really popular here. You love Jay-Z. Get the party started. They had like 400% increase in the click-through, and they had a 66% revenue increase because it's a social message at the right time in the right place to the right person.
It's almost like context is intent, right? It's like where you are says a lot about who you are and what you might want to do. So I'm going to date myself a little bit and shift gears. When I worked at Citigroup in 2004, I ran direct mail campaigns and statement inserts and all these really sexy things to try and get card members to get excited about having a Citi card. And we had a channel called Personalization back in 2004. At the time, it was banner ads. That's what it was. It was banner ads. It maybe said a different thing to different cohorts, but it had nothing to do with who you were. Point being, the term has been so overused, right? The term has been so overused, it's almost become numbed of meaning. So I'd love to hear what your definition of personalization is, and maybe what are some of the best examples of putting this to use?
You're totally right about how people sort of perceive personalization, and it takes a monumental effort to build the perfect algorithm that will work perfectly for each individual and give them exactly whatever they want. And the truth is that a lot of those algorithms are core competencies of the business. It's really hard for like one company to know everything about your business. We try to, instead of thinking about personalization in the way that we've been thinking about it over the last 10 years, but instead just think about it a little bit differently, which is that there's two extremes. One extreme is you make decisions in your business and they affect a wide, pretty much your entire customer base. We don't like that because that's not really optimizing for maybe what we want. There's the other extreme, which is personalization. And there's something right in the middle that I think is really valuable. And if you really take your entire customer base and you analyze their behavior, you understand where they're coming from, you understand location, you understand everything about them, you can actually break them up into groups. You can break them into groups of customers that are your new customers, your power user customers, your most loyal customers, customers that are kind of what I would call casuals of your product, they kind of use your product. And I think what starts to matter more is finding the core set of groups of users and then within the business trying to assign ownership to that, people that can really move the needle.
So it's almost like, you know, reducing friction becomes more important than this holy grail of one-to-one personalization,
that's right,
which just seems
exactly
so complex. It's like, how do you even
right
get started? So the hotel check-in, maybe if they knew your favorite drink when you ordered room service, that might be a nice experience.
Yeah, or they just know that, you know, as a new customer, most people like that particular drink if they're in that block of rooms. Even that's like a reasonable kind of solution to that problem that won't take a humongous effort to get right 100% of the time.
Do either of you have a comment on even, you know, on personalization in general, but then also on a particular company that you think is doing some interesting things in this space?
I think we're in the early innings of personalization. I mean, personalization is delivering the kind of experience that's sensitive to who you are and what you want and what you know, the way that a best friend can be sensitive. And I think while we may not all agree, I think that the future is one where people are going to crave those types of experiences, the truth will play out. We're in the early innings. It's all about location intelligence, understanding moments in time, circumstances we call them, where you might want to take a different action and deliver a different user experience. I think there's a long, exciting road ahead for that.
Personalization is a broad topic. It can mean a lot of things. And I think at Foursquare, we really believe that consumer transparency and opt-in is a big piece of it. What is the value for the user? I mean, we started with consumer services. There's still 50 million people a month use across our apps and our website. And we actually invested a lot in personalization at first, almost too much, because Dennis Crowley, our founder, believed that Yelp and Google gave people recommendations. And like, no matter who you were, you said, where should I go to lunch in, you know, Paris or Chicago? And everyone got the same answer, right? And that's kind of broken. My wife, who's a farm-to-table organic kind of person, and my dad, who's a beef and potatoes kind of guy, should not get the same recommendations. everyone gets at Foursquare City Guide an entirely different set of recommendations based on the kinds of places you go to. And it used to be checking in. Now we just passively are able to understand when phones go in and out of 100 million places, detecting it through Wi-Fi triangulation and Bluetooth and GPS and all of these signals. And so we learn about each person and we can personalize recommendations. But that, you know, per se, I don't know how game-changing that is, because if I just want to, I feel like pizza, I just can ask Google for pizza. But I think what's really exploded is marketing personalization. And this is where, like, we always have the saying that, like, the places you go is the best indicator of who you are. Panera wanted to launch a salad line that was really healthy. And so they wanted to go out and find 20 million Americans who would actually want a healthy salad. And so we profile 150 million Americans based on the places they go, both through our own apps, but through a network of partners using our technology. And then, you know, it's very different than, you know, what we do for Anheuser-Busch, which is go out and match, let's say, a certain beer brand or spirits brand with, like, a 20-something going to craft cocktail bars, which are different than dive bars. And we understand every place, and so where you go creates this picture of your values. And so we could assemble marketing for Panera and launch this thing and measure against millions of people, A-B test in the real world, whether the ads drove people incrementally into Panera locations, and we could show the ROI. So that kind of personalization that has a clear return on investment is exploding, because it is not necessarily one-to-one marketing, but it is micro-targeting of different segments. And that's driving business. And these traditional offline businesses had no way of doing that the way a digital business did.
Yeah. So it's going to be important to deliver the future to users at the same time that they are monetized very, very effectively.
Absolutely.
And I think we're dependent on product developers to put more resources toward innovating in this area and not allowing just the Googles and Facebooks to own it.
So in prep for this panel, I spent time rewatching Minority Report. And it's set in the year 2054. As you're walking around this world, everything is scanning your eyes to know who you are. And you are being marketed to very specifically, right, this one-on-one use case of Lauren. I know you bought this at the Gap last week. Do you want to buy another pair in black? It's on sale. What I want to kind of get at here is kind of, you know, everything in this world is known, including future actions. So the question is, like, how do you ensure customer privacy and remove the creep factor from some of these experiences? And maybe on the flip side, like, will our behaviors change enough so that we don't care?
Well, it's a very interesting movie, Minority Report. The consultants that helped create an image of this world, the technical consultants, formed a company called Oblong to try to actually build this future. At least the part of it where you can interact with a wall, a digital wall. Mm-hmm. Then I've incubated the next company that Quinla Kramer has been working on is video conferencing that really, really works seamlessly. So here's something that I would love to see personalized. When I walk into a conference room, this is personalization. I want it to take my image. I want it to scan my damn retina. I want it to do face recognition. I want it to know that I'm supposed to be on the call that I'm supposed to be on and let me in. I don't want to have to knock. And it should just all work. So yes, it does take trust.
Yeah.
It's something we haven't talked about yet, but it does take a brand that commands trust mm-hmm. from users that opt in, and you're with the program.
I think it comes back to, we just really believe that users should be in control of the choice and transparency. And so, you know, we try to live that. So there are data brokers out there, and there are, like, flashlight apps asking for your 24/7 location information. Why should a flashlight app have your 24/7 location? What value is the flashlight app providing you? And we just don't believe that that is going to be sustainable. We don't participate in any of that. I mean, everything we do is about creating a better user experience. It's giving you the right information at the right time, or a coupon that you've signed up for. Remember to use it while you're at Walgreens, you know, or it's enabling, like, we enable for hotels. A bunch of hotels have gotten rid of their concierges, and they're just using the Foursquare recommendation engine in the hotels of the future. And so all of these things are about creating better user experiences, but they're very transparent. Mm-hmm. They know they're signing up because they're getting value. And so I think that's key. The bad marketing example in Minority Report is, like, remember when people used to say, oh, the future of mobile marketing is if you're near a Starbucks, you're going to get a coupon for a Frappuccino. Well, I got news for you. Everyone is always fucking near a Starbucks. Like, you know, always. Like, it would be a nightmare. Yeah. And so, like, we've really built the technology to understand, that you're in this like really cool bakery that makes these incredible cupcakes, or you're across the street at the gym. And those are very different moments. There's different contexts. And you've got to be super precise down to 100 million places to do that right.
Yeah.
And so that's key, is not bothering people. You got to be super relevant if you're going to tap them on the shoulder. And I think that's the future.
I think traditionally a lot of these experiences relied on you forgetting that you have this great coupon or offer, right? That definitely needs to change, and I think that's shifting a lot. So I think that was an interesting point. Before we wrap up, I'm just going to throw this out there. Is this a misconception, or is this true, that good data scientists will find value for your business?
The truth is that our tools are not necessarily always powerful for them. Good data science teams want to work on the hardest, most challenging data science problems that exist in the company. They don't want to be just trending a graph over time, putting it into Excel and then putting it into a deck. You've hired these people. They're extremely expensive, and we utilize them to do very simplistic math on analyzing the business. And so what I think is valuable is trying to find a more sustainable way of handling this, which is that 90% of a business's questions are pretty reasonably easy to get to. It's just the data and the analysis, and there's some edge cases that you have to kind of figure out. That part's annoying and hard, but 90% of your questions are pretty easy. There's this 10% of really important, sophisticated questions that a business needs to answer, and the data science team is great for answering those extremely hard questions that really no tool can really answer for them.
Yep. Okay. I think in a space that's so crowded, hopefully we have a little bit more clarity on how to balance privacy with personalization, how to remove friction, how to remove breakage, how to also think about customer experiences that are surprise and delight versus solely for monetization. Thank you, Suhail, Gail, and Jeff.